This show is a proud member of
the TechPodcast.com network.
Find out more about this and other shows at
www.techpodcast.com.
TechPodcast.com.
If it's tech, it's here.
Source Trunk. Your trunkload of open source.
Hi, and welcome to Source Trunk episode 30, recorded on the 4th of December 2007. This podcast will try to show the listeners the more practical examples of open source and free software. I will do this by taking random open source software and give it a little review. I'll be drinking a Saint Feuillant with this episode. It's a triple. and this one goes way, way, way back. It was made in the memory of a monk who was traveling in 655 through the Karkol forests, and he was going across a territory that was not his own, and for that he was martyred and beheaded. His disciples erected a chapel, and in 1125 that became the Abbey of Prémontré and later known as the Abbey Saint-Feuillant du Roi. Now, it's the beer itself is, like I said, a triple. It's 8.5 degrees and way too cold for a triple. I've put my fridge on a too low temperature. It has enjoyed re-fermentation in a bottle, of course, and is a not so clear beer for a triple. I can't really see through it. It has a nice hoppy taste, it appears, because I've never drunk it before. It's made of really aromatic spices, and because of the second fermentation, has a really typical bouquet. And it's really dense. I can't see through it, and I really don't like my triples if I can't see through them. But here we go. Yeah, it's soft and a bit creamy. It's not too bad, not too bad. Okay, let's go.
Multimedia software.
AviDimax. AviDimax is a free video editor designed for simple cutting, filtering, and encoding tasks. It supports many file types, including AVI, DVD-compatible MPEG files, MP4, and ASF, using a variety of codecs. Tasks can be automated, and I'll get back on the automated thing, using projects, job queue, and powerful scripting capabilities. I'll just run through the program and give you some, show you some features. I can't discuss them all because there are really a lot of things you can do, and some things even go completely over my head because I'm not really a video editor. But so bear with me. I'll try to be as brief as I can and so complete as I can. You can open a file, a video file, and most of the time your codec, or the codec that is used in the video file, will be completely supported by AviDimax. It's incredible which formats this program supports. So you just can open it, you will see the video in a viewer, and you can, if you want, play it or just browse through it very, very quickly. When you have a little button which you can move from left to right very rapidly through the timeline of your video, and you will see all the frames really hop from one frame to another very, very fast. And here you can take the best point to start your video and end your video if you want to crop a certain amount of your time in the video. Now, that is just how you can see it. Then you have the video options. You can, and that is what you will use it the most for, copy your video to another format. You can encode it to another format, maybe a format that your DVD player will understand, or a format that your computer will understand. And you can simply, if you want to, copy the video to the same format and have the audio, for example, encoded in a completely different format. The video codecs that are supported on my system, on my Debian system, are, for example, H.263, MGPEG, MGPEG4, VCD, DVD, SVCD, VCD, SVCD, DVD, not in LAVC, MPEG2, XFIT4, X.264, HUF, YUF, what I've never heard before, FFV1, and so on, and so on, and so on. The audio codecs go from LAME to FAAC to Vorbis to TuLAME, WAVPCM, WAV, LPCM, and other formats that you could add to AV DMUX. The formats you can use AVI, OGM, MPEG Video, MP4, and PSP, but that appears to be broken because it's marked here PSP broken. Anyway, different audio formats you can encode it to, different video formats you can encode it to, and the only thing you have to do is choose those codecs and do a save of your video. That's it. You're done. Okay, next item. Now, well, there is more to it than this. It goes really, really fast. The encoding goes really fast. What you can do as well is put a lot of decoder options. You can do a lot of post-processing options as well. You can change the frame rate of your video. And one thing that is really cool is you can add filters to your output video as well. And not 2, 3, or 5 filters. No, you can add a whole set of filters. If you open the filter window, you can choose between transform filters, interlacing filters, color filters, noise filters, sharpness filters, subtitle filters, miscellaneous filters, and you can just add them all in a stack. For example, I could say, well, I want you to crop this video, and then you can set completely via the graphical interface the crop you want. And after the crop, I would like you to deinterlace, but not only deinterlace, I wanted to deinterlace via kernel deint, or maybe you're more familiar with decomp decimate, what I don't even begin to understand, but there are a lot of different ways you can deinterlace your video or interlace your video. And AVDMX really supports all those different interlacing filters. You can change the colors of your video. You can change contrast. You can have Luma equalizer filter working on your video. You can do a chroma shift. You can do Luma only. And I'm guessing that only 10% or 5% of my listeners go like, oh yes, I know that's something I could use. I have no idea what I could do with it. But I think for a lot of people, this could be really useful. Something I really use is the denoise M player option, which will completely reduce the noise in your video, smoothen the image a bit, and increase the compressibility, which works very fine for my videos. You can enhance the sharpness. You can have Gaussian smoothness on your videos to blur the picture completely. And remember, this is all video. This goes all really, really fast. You can add subtitles. You can really burn subtitles in your videos. And the miscellaneous options, for example, you can have a little whirl or a mosaic in your video, which is completely useless, but very fun to toy with. So there's a lot you can do, and you can even have a preview open where you can preview how it would look like so that you don't have to do the complete processing, which could take a long time, and then afterwards see that your result is not really what you wanted and you have to start all over again. No, you can see it in real time what it would look like, and that is really, really a very nice feature. There's a lot more to it. One of the things that I like the most is the fact that you can control it completely from the command line as well. You can have the thing started up by a script which will feed your videos that you have from one or the other PVR, and it will process them completely to your liking. You can have complete job queues and projects with this really nice piece of machinery. Okay, now, practical uses. For example, if you know the NUPL video format that MIFDV produces. Well, if you're not using NIF export, you could use AVDMix to have it converted into a nice little AVI. I use it especially for the programs I record for my children. Most of the time I will just record 3 hours of footage in a row, and then I'll just cut them to pieces with little AVDMux, put them in nice little folders, and then I have burned DVDs with complete series of cartoons for my children. For example, you could have a legal copy of an impossible format you got from a friend. Well, you can transform it to a good format that your DVD player would understand. Beautiful. Now, the offer is mean. Believe it or not, that's the only name I have found where I can pin AVDMux on. So my apologies to the offer, but you're mean to me. Availability. It's there for Linux, Windows, Mac OS X, and I think I've used it on the FreeBSD as well. Latest release is 2.4 preview free, and you can get it from avdmux.org. The license is GPL, and programming language is C++. You can support it by, well, contacting the offer, because I have not found anything concerning donating to this wonderful project.
Multimedia software.
GRIP. GRIP, just like AVDMux, is something I've stumbled upon last week and really, really love because of the fact that it gets the job done. A brief description from the site. GRIP is a CD player and CD ripper for the GNOME desktop. It has the ripping capabilities of CD Paranoia built in, but can also use external rippers such as CDDA to WAV. It also provides an automated frontend for MP3 and other audio format encoders, letting you take a disk and transform it easily straight into MP3s. And that's just what it does. It is just a little graphical program, which you can use to rip your CDs. Well, yes, it's another CD ripper, but it's one with a twist. And a little twist is this one. I heard on a podcast that the newest iTunes has a sort of jukebox functionality, which you can use to insert a CD. iTunes will rip it completely automatically for you and then just eject the CD. In this way, you can have a complete collection of CDs and rip it while you're doing something completely else, completely different. You don't have to put in a CD, select the songs you want, or select all songs, and then click on export and click on save and so on and so on. No, you just insert a CD, let the program do its stuff, in this case iTunes, and then let it just eject the CD to show it's done. Well, you can do the same thing with GRIP, but let's go through the options you can you have with this program. Just insert the CD. It will automatically get all the information from a CDDB database. In this case, it's the freedb.freedb.org, and it will get all the track information, the album information, and so on and so on and so on. From there on, you can play the CD if you want. You can have it automatically played, so you can just use it as a genuine CD player, or you can rip, of course, and it will first rip your CD into WAV files and afterwards encode it in the format you want it encoded. In my case, that's ARC, obviously, or you can have it encoded in MP3s as well. What you can do as well is, of course, put the bitrate you want it to encode. In my case, it's 192. That is like the standard. That's a very good quality and doesn't take too much space. You have options like autoplay on disk insert, reshuffle before each playback, that's when you're using it as a CD player. Ripping options are, for example, which ripper you want to use, CD Paranoia, CDDA to WAV. You can have CD Paranoia completely disabled, in which rip file format you want it to have. Maybe you want to do something with the WAV files afterwards. So again, here there's a lot of stuff I'm just not even mentioning because I'm running out of time, but I'll try to highlight the most important important ones. You can have the encoder set to use a encode file format. In this way, you can point it to your music database. You can point it to your music collection. And it will write the ARC files or MP3 files directly where you want it. In my case, I have an encoding file format where it first will use or make the directory according to the artist, and then make or use the directory according to the album name, and then it will put the ARC files there. So I just point gRIP to my music database, I insert CDs, I'll let it do its thing automatically and just eject the CD. The only thing I have to do is put a new CD in, and that's, well, the least you can do. Various options like creating M3U files for having a complete little database. You can have the info inserted into a SQL server as well, or you could use the Digital DJ program that is as well of the same author. You will see it on the on his website. I'll put the link on sourcestrong.com and have your complete collection managed by that one. But that is for a another episode, because this would go too far. You can have ID3 tags inserted, ID3 version 2 inserted. The character set encoding can be put in here. Like I said, it will get the information from the freedb.org site. You could use a proxy server, miscellaneous options like showing the tray icon, stuff like that. You can even submit track information over the internet via this program. I haven't tried this one, but it appears you can do this. So it's very, very complete, and yet the program itself is very condensed, very small. It doesn't take too much real estate on your machine, and when you put it in automatic mode to rip and encode, you don't even see it because it's in the background and just doing its thing. Check it out for yourself. It's very small, so it doesn't take too much place on your computer as well. You have no excuse. The author is Mike Oliphant, and it's available on all BSD platforms, so FreeBSD, NetBSD, OpenBSD, Apple, macOS X, all POSIX, Linux, BSD, Unix-like operating systems, Linux, Solaris. Unfortunately, not for Windows, but if you want to try it out as a Windows user, there is no solution left but to use a Linux machine or to dual boot your machine into Linux or use something like Ruby. Install Linux in this way in a safe environment on your Windows machine without even hurting it and try out gRIP. Okay, that's covered. The latest release is 3.2.0.1. It hasn't been updated since 2005, but why would you? It's stable and mature. Well, this program, in my opinion, is done. It doesn't need anything more. You can get it from nostatic.org/gRIP, but I'll put the link in the show notes. License is GPL, and it's written in plain old simple C. Now, to support this, I have not found anything on this program as well, so you might try to contact the author and ask him how you can give a little donation to this wonderful program.
A little extra.
VNC Snapshot. This is a little command line program for VNC. As you may recall, a VNC server will give you control over your computer, and so you can take over the mouse, keyboard, and screen and do lots of handy stuff with it. Now, VNC Snapshot will just make a JPEG image of the VNC server's screen. Now, why the heck would you need something like that? Why would you do this? Well, some examples: you can make snapshots with intervals of a graphical user interface that is on a server, which you can't see otherwise, and you want to see every second, every minute, every hour what that monitor gives as an output. Maybe you have the bad luck that you have to monitor such a horrible application on a server in which you have nothing else to rely upon. Maybe you want to make a quick snapshot of a user's desktop for troubleshooting. Maybe you want to make a little program that will make that snapshot, because, for example, example, a user wants to mail you a problem with its computer or with a program, and he just wants to make a little snapshot, well, then you can even use VLC Snapshot to take over the computer, make a little snapshot, and just mail it to you. It would take a bit of scripting, but that is what VLC Snapshot is for. To explain it just a little bit more, so it's only command line based. The only thing you can do is make a JPEG of the display. You have various options, like for example, you want a cursor or no cursor in the JPEG. You can give it a password file name, and that is very important because you will be using this in a command line. It will ask you for a password. In a script, that is a no-go. You can't have your script answer that password for you. So VNC Snapshot provides VNC password. VD, which is a WD, which is a program that will create a password file for you and that you can feed to VNC Snapshot, and then you can have it completely automized in a little script. You can set the encoding, you can set the compression level, you can set the VNC quality, you can set it to be completely quiet or very verbose, and you can even set in your command line a little rectangle geometry where you want what you precisely want of the screen, which little piece of the screen you want to snapshot. Like I said, you can have multiple counts snapshotted, and then you can set a FPS rate, which sets a rate in seconds to have those JPEGs. I have used VNC Snapshot already in a few of my scripts that are very helpful to me in a server environment and working with users. So I can think of a lot of examples to use it, but maybe you can think of more examples to use this. You could even use this to make pseudo random passwords. For example, you could, if you want a really truly or pseudo random password, you can make a snapshot of a screen where a user is working and then have a program count the number of blue pixels and red pixels and mix them up in a random number and use it for a password. For example. Okay, I think you can imagine stuff you could do with this. The author is Grant McDorman, and it's available for Unix, Linux, and Windows platforms. The installation, you can have it in binaries or the source code, and the latest release is 1.2a, and it's available from vncsnapshot.sourceforge.net. The license is GPL, and it's written in C and C++. And how to support it? Well, beats me. Here again, I've found nothing. It's a bit puzzling to me because I know that sourceforge.net has a really good and very simple opt-in donation system where you can use PayPal to give just a little amount of money to thank the authors for their great work. And there are a lot of computer authors who will freely give their source to the community and don't expect anything back from it. And that's really a very nice gesture. But once in a while, it would be good if you could give something back if you're not a programmer, by a donation, for example. Okay, some listener feedback. In the past few weeks, I got quite a few mails where people were asking me to do a little review on a certain open source package. And I must say, be patient because I've got a lot of those questions, a lot of those software packages in the backlog, and I try to get to them as soon as possible. David Fulton sent me a really nice email. Hi Dimitri, I just discovered your show a few days back and have been trying to catch up with the old episodes. Love the format of discussing open source software. I have experimented with Linux several times over the last 10 years and have recently returned for another visit. It finally seems to have matured enough that it is competitive with Windows and OS X. Although I have worked with Unix, AX and HPUX, in the past, I do not want a command line based OS on my desktop. I love the Windows and Apple style graphical user interface. I recently tried OpenBSD, Debian, Fedora, Ubuntu and Kubuntu before finally settling with Ubuntu. I really appreciate your attitude about the various operating systems. To me, they are tools to complete the task and I like to use the best tool for the job. I really love the fact that you cover open source software which runs on the OS X and Windows platforms. It's great to know that these excellent tools are available if I need something which runs on Windows or OS X. Also, I've been looking for a system recovery tool which has hardware disk memory diagnostics. Ideally, it would be a live Linux CD which would allow me to boot from the CD and run the diagnostics repairs on that system. Can you recommend any tools which may fit this description? Again, you have a really great show. Thanks, David. Well, David, thanks for this really nice email. Concerning the fact that I cover open source software for Windows and OS X as well, well, in my opinion, to be honest, everybody should use a Linux or a BSD system because it's, well, open source and it is just phenomenal to see how this open sourced operating system grow and how they develop and how the community really thrives to have it really usable for all ages and all different types of users. But for a lot of people, a Linux or BSD system is simply not an option, and that for different reasons. I don't have to start about that. A lot of people will only work on a Windows or OS X system, and they have all the right to do so. But if we can win them over with open source software on that operating system and have them little by little use open source software and appreciate the idea behind open source software, then maybe one day they will switch and try also a open source operating system. Ubuntu, for example, like you said in your mail, is something that you can give to someone who wants to try for the first time. That is, in my opinion, well, it's the safest bet that it will stick. I gave it to my girlfriend, I gave it to friends, and it sticks. So yes, that's a very good, in my opinion, choice. The Rescue CDs, well, I use three of them, and that is System Rescue CD, Gparted Live CD, and the Damn Small Linux distribution. But those are only the three ones I use and know. I'm sure that amongst you, listener, there are a lot of people who use something else and would like to know what you are using so I can pass it on to David. So if you use some sort of system rescue live distribution or something else that is open source, please mail it to sourcetrunk@gmail.com or post it on the website. And then I can look into it and see what I can do with it myself. Thanks for the really nice feedback. That's always nice to hear. Okay, let's wrap it up. On a little side note, I went to Paris a few weeks ago for a developers meeting of a really, really, really proprietary publishing software company, and I loved what I saw. For the first time in years, they have made a gear shift. They have changed their direction to open source software. Their software was really one of the most closed proprietary pieces of software I've encountered in my professional life, and the server software was really hard to deal with. And now they're completely changing direction and using a lot of server-sided open source technology. That was really, for me, a very pleasant surprise to see that happen. They made open source development so you could hook into the server systems, and if a company of that magnitude can do it, well, any company can do it. I was really, really happily, nicely surprised, and it really shows that a lot of companies are turning to open source implementation, which is lovely. Paris also was very lovely because it was completely drenched into already the Christmas spirit, and it really was a city of light because they had Christmas lights all over their buildings, and it was really very nice atmosphere. Speaking of Christmas, well, if you want to buy something really cool for your kids, buy dance mats on eBay for $20. I think you can have one for $10, and download Stepmania for free, and have a ball. The Wii console doesn't even come near the fun you'll have with two dancing mats and Stepmania. I'm not sponsored by it, but, well, I'm having so much fun with it. It's really a tip for Christmas. Next episode, I will be drinking a Göse, if I can have my hands on one. Leave your comments on sourcestrunk.com or mail me directly via sourcestrunk@gmail.com. I'm leaving you with Wake Up by Butterfly Catchers. Thanks for your time. And good hunting.
Wake up inside. You've been asleep so long, but I know that you're still tired.